I'm going to tell you something happened yesterday.
Ooh.
The league executives are wondering what the heck it means, and it happened within 5 minutes.
If you were anywhere near the internet the past few days, you know what this is.
It was a trade yesterday between the Utah Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets. It's a very strange trade. Very strange trade. You'd really have to be a Jazz or a Nets fan to even know what I'm talking about right now.
Okay.
Our good friend Brian Windhorst, normally a mild-mannered NBA reporter, very cryptically talked his way into the hall of memes.
Royce O'Neal, who is a role-playing three-point defensive shooter, to Brooklyn for a future first-round draft pick. And so you're going, well, what do you care about Royce O'Neal? Why does that matter? Why would the Jazz do that? Why would they do that?
And we hung on his every word.
Why? What's going on in Utah?
What's going on?
And that's what people in the league are watching right now.
Okay.
What's going on in Utah?
So today, the man, the meme, the legend himself, Brian Windhorst, tells us the untold truth about the question heard round the world and what's really going on in Brooklyn. I'm Pablo Torre. It is Thursday, July 7th, and this is ESPN Daily. Brian Windhorst, I just want to establish a key detail at the very top here, which is that I don't consider you the most online person
right
at ESPN. Would you agree with that general assessment?
Yes, I would say that I don't believe that the world operates around social media. Does that make me sound every bit of my 44 years?
Absolutely, Brian, because you cover the most terminally online sport, the NBA. You don't live on Twitter. You vocally hate aggregation.
I do.
And so with this as the backdrop, how would you say the last week of your life has felt?
I know it's not what I'm supposed to say. What I'm supposed to say is, oh my God, it's been amazing. Thank you, everybody, for the love. You're the greatest. Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You really like me. You really, really like me. Is that too old of a reference, Sally Field?
A little
bit. Nobody knows what I'm talking about.
A little bit.
Look, the thing is, I am appreciative. I appreciate the people saying kind words. Obviously, the reaction I've gotten has never been this wide. I don't think I've ever had a video clip that's had 6 million views as that First Take clip has had.
Just one version of it got 6 million views, not accounting for the whole, spawned iterations of it thereafter.
Right. But I've also had the other end of the stick, the sharp end of the stick, which maybe not as widespread, but I've had it a lot. And I will have it a lot again because the nature of the way I do my job. So I'm a little bit, hardened on the way it all works. So I haven't been like the best subject in people who are reaching out. Like I pretty much said no to all requests over the weekend. People are like, oh yeah, yeah, you're playing it cool. Cool, cool, cool. That's smart media strategy. I'm like, no, I've been gone for 8 of the last 9 weeks and my wife planned a full weekend of festivities. And my son, who's 4.5, hadn't seen me and he wants to go swimming. And like, that's just the reality of being a 44-year-old dad. And so I'm very appreciative. Thank you. And I know that the internet has no memory. And so when the same folks who were saying nice things don't like something I say, it will come back with the pitchforks and the knives. And I understand.
Yeah. This is the most Brian Windhorst response to that question I've ever received. I mean, it's incredible, Brian. It's incredible that, yes, you are swimming in retweets and your son just wants to go swimming.
Right.
It's of course true that, yes, we here at ESPN Daily, we appreciate you making an exception for us because we knew you before you were the number one meme on planet Earth. And I feel like the way that it happened needs to be sort of recapped here because it's ridiculous how it happened, Brian. I think we can all agree that you becoming like the new crying Jordan off of a Royce O'Neal story on ESPN2 on a Friday before a holiday weekend on First Take is ridiculous. It's truly like surreal. But yeah, you broke down a very strange, completely overshadowed trade between the Nets and the Jazz that had broken just minutes, literal minutes, after Kevin Durant's trade request went public. And you gave us theater.
It was a trade yesterday between the Utah Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets. It's a very strange trade. Very strange trade.
It got to the point where people were putting dramatic music underneath your voice.
Why would the Jazz do that? Why would the Jazz, who have two stars on their roster, take a player who's one of their starters and best defensive.
Well, look, if you want the real, are we the real?
That's people, all we want.
People were like, "Wow, that was a tremendous accomplishment. I mean, what an incredible story." And I go, "No, guys, the accomplishment was that I talked about the Utah Jazz for three consecutive minutes on ESPN." There's no way that would have been permitted on a day that it wasn't Friday of a holiday weekend where all of the huge majority of the staff was on vacation. But really what happened, Pablo, is I did a podcast on television, on live television. I am a huge fan of podcasts. I consume way more podcasts than I do television because I like the storytelling aspect of it.
Yes.
I tell stories or construct narratives of stuff happening in the NBA like that on my podcast all of the time.
And it's great.
In fact, the dry run for that was the night before when I recorded a podcast where I talked about the Jazz thing, Donovan Mitchell type thing. And that's basically what happened is I was doing a podcast on live TV. And it happened because it was on First Take, which the A block of First Take, I mean, typically the A blocks of the morning shows on ESPN, you know, 10 to 12 minutes. And First Take, they sometimes go more than 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And on this day, Stephen A. Smith, he was out. He was taking some vacation, some recovery time. Mad Dog Russo, who was in several days before that, who I loved working with, he was off. So, like, basically, I had the floor and the show. And I had good support from the producers. I had told the producers I wanted to talk about the Jazz. On some shows at ESPN, they would have been like, how about we talk about the Lakers? And by the way, they wouldn't be wrong.
Royce O'Neal has literally never had his name said in an A block of pretty much any show on sports television anywhere.
Right. I'm sure Royce O'Neal himself was even, I haven't had a chance to talk to him. In fact, I don't think I've ever talked to Royce O'Neal. But I was glad to give him the attention he deserved. So I would love to be able to do podcast style discussions more on television. And if this leads to the opportunity to have more podcast like discussions on ESPN, that will have been something that is special. But two things. One, I don't think so, because ESPN structures show based on data analysis, and the data says that's not what people want. When people complain about, why are you talking about Tim Tebow for the 45th time? Why are you talking about Kyrie Irving for the 45th time? The answer is you.
The will of you, the people, Brian.
Because that's what the data shows you
democracy,
want,
yes, demands it.
Sirs and madams. But the other thing I will say is I was also trying to avoid aggregation. Because
God, you hate aggregation so much, and I respect your hatred of aggregation, for the record.
Well, I don't hate aggregators. I mean, journalists, I myself have done it in a various way for years. I mean, we listen to athletes give a 40-minute interview or a 12-minute interview, and we take three sentences that they said and build a whole story around it. I mean, that's, you know, although since I've been dealing with that type of aggregation, I definitely changed the way I try to portray what athletes say. But I mean, I'm guilty of it. I'm not
sure. Pulling a quote is by definition an incomplete act.
Right. But I had a pretty good idea that Rudy Gobert was going to get traded. I thought it was probable. But if I come on to First Take and I say, I hear that there's a chance that Rudy Gobert is going to get traded to the Minnesota Timberwolves, which is what I thought. It would, within minutes, it would say report, colon, or Winhurst, colon,
mm-hmm.
Gobert to be traded by Jazz, which did happen, but might, for 100 reasons, might not have happened.
Yeah, well, so, okay, so we should acknowledge up front here that, yes, you were correct. Like, the Gobert trade happened hours after that, Brian. But what you're giving us, though, the TikTok of your attempt to avoid aggregation, I mean, as you say, you do realize that as much as that strategy is sensible, it also, like, backfired as spectacularly as a thing could possibly backfire, because not only did this opinion get circulated everywhere, your face got aggregated. Like, you not only had your work become a meme, you personally became the meme.
But I was happy with the way it was aggregated, because it was aggregated in the form of a question.
Mm.
As opposed to a form of a statement. And that's the thing, like, if you're in my job, like, my job is to give inside information. But, you know, what makes my job very difficult is when I will do a radio interview or we'll do a TV appearance, and then like 3 to 6 hours later, my phone blows up from an agent or a team, and they're going, where did you get this from? And I go, okay, what's my next 12 hours going to be ruined by? You know, by the way, sometimes I do go too far and I do maybe say more than I should. I'm not even angry with that. I'm just saying, like, the reason I did that was because it was a nice story arc to tell, because I knew that, you know, there was a bit of a story you could weave. And because I also wanted to avoid making an ironclad statement. I wanted to talk about what I thought was going to happen without actually saying the words. And so I was, you know, contorting myself, which I can only do verbally and I can't do physically. I was contorting myself into a way that I wouldn't for the next 12 hours have to answer, Brian, you reported the Jazz are about to trade Rudy Gobert. What is the latest? I was trying to avoid that. And I wish I could do stuff like that all the time. It's a balancing act, to say the least.
I would like to push back very hard on something you just said, which is that you cannot contort yourself physically. Because, Brian, if I've learned anything from USA Today, which just posted the 19 best Brian Winhurst memes that are everywhere, or SB Nation posting a survey of all the Brian Winhurst memes, it is that your image, your gestures, you just pointed at us earlier in this clip, and I'm like, is that a meme now? Like, is this, I mean, are you familiar with this, Brian? Have you seen these? Have you seen that, yes, like, people are posting stuff like, my wife says she's going to Target for one thing, but she grabs a cart. Why is that?
Right. Yeah. And if I were to say the Jazz traded Royce O'Neal in a salary dump trade when they have two all-stars on the roster, and now they're going to trade one of those all-stars, if I said it like that, I wouldn't be dealing with that meme. I'd be dealing with a bunch of headlines that said report colon. And then my life would have been hell. If you want the truth, my life would have been hell. But if I say, why is that? Why would they do that? Then people consider it very differently. I was trying to tell this story without having my day ruined by aggregation. And what I mean by ruined is my boss is going, are you going to write a story that says this for the website?
Mm-hmm.
Every single television show. I mean, because I, you know, right now I'm doing like 10 to 15 hits a day. And I don't want to have to defend it on every show. I know I have a general idea, but I can't say it all. So that the choice is, do I say nothing? Which I do a lot, but do I say nothing or do I say something? And, you know, do I need to be hearing from Rudy, Rudy's agents, the Jazz? Do I need to be putting out fires like that for a day? And so really I was just trying to entertain and enlighten the viewer without lighting a bushfire, which I tend to light bushfires all the time. So that's all I was trying to do, if you want the truth.
Up next, we go further down the rabbit hole with Brian Windhorst in search of the truth.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Well, I want to ask you another question that demands the truth, which is, because you're a guy who is strategically dropping breadcrumbs with varying theatricality to account for nuance, right? What percentage, Brian, are you saying on record at any given moment what you actually know? What percentage of your brain is being given to the world, and how much are you holding back?
Well, it's the word no is, you know, the word no is relative. I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, but like, you know, Woj, imagine Woj. I mean, I would say whenever I go to Woj with a news tip, I would say something like 19 times out of 20, he already knows it. Mm. So there'll be something that I find out that is information to me that is unknown, that is previously unknown to me, that I think rises to the level that he should be looped in on. And
as a
almost
teammate,
all the
yes.
time. Yeah. Which we do. We do work together closely as teammates at ESPN. So trust me, if you think that I'm only dishing part of what I know, just imagine the reservoir of information that Woj is holding back until it's official and ready so that it's not incorrectly taken out of context. So,
right. And it meets the journalistic standard for you, Brian. That's the point, right?
Right.
Like the reason you can't say Rudy Gobert's about to be traded is because presumably you don't have the sourcing so bulletproof that it's going to preempt all of those angry calls.
That's right.
So you mentioned another thing which I want to ask about, which is that you were avoiding making your life hell. And that came after you already said at the very top that your wife and your child had a like nice run of non-work planned for dad. So yeah. how hellish has this been in terms of, I guess the question really is, how much has your wife enjoyed the fact that you're now internet meme famous to literally millions upon millions upon millions of people?
I think she finds it mildly amusing. I think she's way more interested in having support for the 4.5-year-old who was home for 2 weeks or 2 days last week with a cold, non-COVID illness. Thank you. I have to specify that report.
Yes.
I will say that we had a number of people over for social events over the weekend, and socially distanced outside, everybody. Just yep. I don't want to yep. more reporting.
That's right.
And one of her coworkers came, and she wore a Utah Jazz hat. She had no idea why she was wearing a Utah Jazz hat. Her husband told her to wear a Utah Jazz hat. He had one. She had no clue. She just said, "My husband said to wear this hat. I don't know why, but he said you would not find it was funny." So I was just getting little subliminal stuff like that. But obviously, I was loosely aware of what was going on, but I didn't have the luxury of being, in addition to, you know, keeping an eye on the news, talking to my sources who were, they were all aware of it. My sources were all texting me the memes as if I hadn't seen them. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my friend's wife wore a Utah Jazz hat to a barbecue. Now, why would she do that?
Why would she do that? Exactly. I think that was exactly what she said. Why am I doing this? Okay.
Has anyone asked you, Brian, to do the thing? Have they been like, Brian, can you do the thing for us now? Can you do the point thing? You know, can you say the Utah thing?
It's not even something that I normally do. I don't think it's in my repertoire. You know how Bill Clinton, like, you know, he had his...
Yes, the thumb and the index finger. Know, yes.
You know, I think Obama did that too. I don't even know why I did that. But props to the First Take producers. You know, First Take,
ISO,
you know, they have
cam,
cameras.
Man. That's right.
They have cameras all around you at First Take. It's actually kind of... it's disconcerting.
Yeah.
Because like cameras behind
you. Yeah, it's a panopticon of surveillance.
Also, again, if we're being real.
Please.
The chairs that we sit in are not that comfortable. Okay? They're high chairs because people look better sort of sitting up.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you kind of get, you know.
Yeah,
you
turtle.
Sit in a low chair, you know, you like that. So that particular chair, they have great chairs at First Take. And you can sort of lean back. I mean, like, seriously, if you want the truth, I was leaning back because I like that chair. There's other chairs where if you lean back, like, you're going over backwards. Like, there's no support. Like, you end up going way back. Part of it was the tremendous lumbar support that Stephen A. Smith demands in the First Take studio. It was really the combination of all of those things. Because I leaned back, and that, like, let me sort of tilt my head and put up my hands and get that angle. Because normally you're not going to be like leaning backwards in the chair.
No,
you can get ridiculous angle.
You gaze to the heavens, palms outstretched.
That's right.
Convening an audience in the round, Brian,
for
the
example,
drama
the chairs
of
that they have, the chairs that they have in LA for NBA Today.
Oh.
Like.
Unsupportive.
That
is what you're
maneuver
saying.
would have been impossible. It would have been a completely different meme altogether. But like, if you really want to peel the curtain back and you want all the information,
I do.
The Stephen A. Smith branded chairs at the First Take studio in New York Seaport played a significant role in the creation of the meme.
Windhorst column, Stephen A.'s chair, responsible for most popular meme.
That's right.
In the year 2022.
For sure. I can say that with a straight face because it's true.
After the break, what's actually happening with Kevin Durant and the Nets?
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Brian, I do want to rewind even further back for people because you were on this podcast with me live in L.A. telling me, as Winstradamus, that James Harden, then a Brooklyn Net, was going to be traded to the Sixers. Days before it happened, you were a lone voice in the wilderness on this. You were, again, ahead of everybody in this news cycle saying that the Nets were willing to trade both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And so now we're talking on a Wednesday afternoon, and things have been, I would say, quiet, maybe a little too quiet, Brian. So where are we? Are they going to actually trade Kevin Durant before the season starts?
Well, I don't think the Nets like any of the proposals that have been given to them. And to me, this is reminiscent of two star trades in the last decade. And I do believe history is a guide when it comes to this kind of stuff. One trade was Dwight Howard in 2012 when he finally asked for his last trade from the Magic. He wanted to go to the Nets, and the Nets really wanted Howard. And the Magic just didn't kind of like what the Nets had to offer, you know? And in this case, I really do think that Kevin Durant is interested in playing for the Suns. The Suns are interested in trading for KD. And I just don't think the Nets love what the Suns' offer is, whatever that offer is, whether they're putting everything on the table or not. They can't trade Booker. It's not functionally allowed. So you have to take that out of there. And so you kind of have this stalemate. And the Kawhi Leonard trade was somewhat similar in that he asked for a trade late. And that ended up playing out for weeks. And ultimately, they got less than you would have thought. And so I kind of see similarities in those situations. So my expectation is that the Nets are going to wait, and they're not happy with what they're being offered. And we might even indicate we'll bring them to camp. But again, let's judge their actions. Their actions with Harden were they were going to wait, and they didn't wait. They waited for a better offer. And the trade that they got ultimately was, I thought it was, under the circumstances where they were really only negotiating with one team, I thought it was okay. And in this case, there's actually multiple teams showing interest. So I expect it to take a while, unless there's some sort of event that happens outside that could rush it. And ultimately, I think it's more likely than not that Durant is traded and then Kyrie follows. My belief is that Kyrie will go second because the Nets have to know what they're getting back for Durant. Kyrie, especially as it pertains to taking on salary or whatever. So we're just going to sit here and have the summer of KD, I'm sorry to say, is my guess.
Well, hold on. As we all sit around and wait, Brian, as we wait for, and you put this bug in my brain years ago, this aphorism, as we wait for four quarters to make a dollar in the NBA, which it rarely does, almost never does, in terms of a superstar being that big dollar bill. I have questions about why it is exactly that Kevin Durant is asking out. And I get it, big picture, right? I think. But I'm just curious, are you aware of a tipping point? He just signed a max extension, of course, last summer with 4 years left on it. Now, it was surprising to see him do this to most people, I think. Maybe not you. What did he want in Brooklyn that he wasn't getting at the end?
I mean, I've heard various things, but I don't want to say for sure, Pablo, because I don't know exactly where KD was. I do know that when the Nets got the request, their first reaction wasn't to immediately try to talk him out of it. It didn't hit them like a ton of bricks, like they didn't know it was coming. Is there a scenario in which he does stay?
That's the question to me right now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, of course there's a scenario. I mean, Kevin is the guy who sometimes is passionate about something and then changes his mind. I don't expect that, but you'd have to be foolhardy to not acknowledge the possibility with 4 years on his contract. But it's whatever you hear now is a negotiating position, just like it was in the Harden stock when they were saying they weren't going to trade him. It was a negotiating position. Steve Nash is out there speaking on the record with a straight face saying we're not going to trade him. I mean, he was just lying.
Yes.
He was just lying.
Yes.
And he was lying for a reason. He was trying to improve their negotiating position. He was lying with the approval and backing of the management. They no doubt went over what he was going to say on the topic. So, their credibility just isn't great.
No. Well, but credibility, Brian, as we assess that, right? Because there is the Nets agenda, there's Kevin Durant's agenda, and there is Kyrie Irving's agenda. And oftentimes the latter two things are being conflated, right? Like, oh, they're a package deal. They're a friendship. What is your sense of that dynamic, the Kyrie and KD being on a singular page together thing? What do you think about that?
Well, Kyrie said, see you in the fall, and Durant asked for a trade. So again, let's judge people on their actions. Sometimes you can take people at their word. In this case, I'm going to judge people on their actions. And his action was, I'm going to request a trade away from the team that Kyrie has said, I'll see you in the fall.
I mean, to me, Brian, like when you talk about Kyrie and KD, there is an impulse to think about like, are they playing four-dimensional chess, right? Like, was this all sort of pre-planned? And your sense of it is there is not a coordinated orchestration by those two guys in terms of how they are currently destabilizing the franchise that they play for.
My feel is that they are working independently at this point. Obviously, in the past, they have worked together. And I can't say that they wouldn't work together again in the future. And maybe the future means in 10 days. But my sense is right now they are working independently of each other. And that's the thing about the NBA, especially the NBA in 2022. And I say this all the time when I talk about situations. Like, sometimes I'll get like a very reliable report on something, or like I am told by a direct source, this is how I feel. This is how my client feels. This is what we are going to do. And 10 days later, it is not true. Their feelings have changed. Does that mean what I said 10 days before is wrong? No, it was true then. And that's why you got to kind of keep going back. And that's why the Nets are going to have a process here. But if you don't like the hand, wait a little bit, because in the NBA, especially when you're dealing with a guy like KD, whose feelings, you know, he at one point was totally in Golden State, totally in on Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. totally out on both, totally in on Brooklyn, totally out. I don't know. I mean, he, you know, it seems pretty clear he's interested in playing for Phoenix, but I don't have the update today. I think this particular case is more like spinning the roulette wheel than it is betting on the outcome of a game.
So the gamble, though, the roulette wheel spin that the Nets took on Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, James Harden, we know now it was 16 games in total, Brian, which is absurd. It's truly absurd. The grand experiment was 16 games, all those three guys together. When you look back and assess what the Nets tried to do to accommodate the experiment, right? Because we'll get into eventually, I guess, the full TikTok postmortem on who messed up and why and when, what was the tipping point? But can you just give us a sense of what the Nets tried to do to keep this going and to what extent they became sick of their policy of appeasement behind the scenes?
I mean, you have to understand something about Joe Tsai. Here we go, where we're going to go into a little podcast answer that I wouldn't give on TV.
Yes.
Joe Tsai became a billionaire negotiating the construction of a conglomerate in China. Okay? I don't understand how everything works in China. I am not a geopolitical expert. I have spent time in China.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen the tip of the iceberg of the maze and the uncertainty of the hierarchy of how decisions are made in China. But I know that Joe Tsai, to build a multi-billion dollar company with Jack Ma in China,
Alibaba, yes, China's Amazon,
it took a lot, right? Can you imagine what Joe Tsai has had to maneuver around to do this in his life? And so now he is the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, and he's got a player saying that he doesn't need a coach. When the coach is in place, he, you know, apparently does whatever he wants. And then, like, the coup de grace after he completely undercut this season, which, by the way, Nets had the second highest payroll and, like, paid, like, tens and tens of millions of dollars in luxury tax to get knocked out in the first round, not even winning a game. And then the guy says, Kevin and I are the general managers of the team.
That's right.
You can imagine that Joe Tsai was like, what the bleep?
Well, Brian, after 3 years of accommodation is what it feels like from the outside, right? Like, I think of DeAndre Jordan being their friend and being chosen over Jared Allen, a far more valuable player, a big man, right? That was a choice that was made. Kenny Atkinson, the former coach, being ousted, reportedly because that was not the choice of the players in question. It feels like they tried it, is my point here.
For sure. And just, they had to give DeAndre Jordan $40 million.
Jeez.
To get Kyrie and Durant. And, they deemed it worthwhile. They probably didn't even think about it that much. They're like, okay, sure. We got
to
get Kyrie
get these
and
guys.
Durant. We'll give them $40 million. And at some point, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze.
Yes. To me, Brian, like, you zoom out of this story and you're like, what does this tell you about where we are in the modern NBA, right? How much of this is specific to the Nets and how much of what the Nets have gone through as a front office that made these calculated bets, paid these concessions, how much does that seem instructive about team building going forward? Or is this just its own particular brew of very unique personalities?
Yes, to all of it. And so, I was on the front lines in Miami where the Heat assembled this super team and basically gave almost no concessions. They still made all those guys have 6% or less body fat. They still made them, have certain rules about their dress code and whatever.
Right.
And it broke up after 4 years. And, that was, the way the Heat managed it was part of the reason. And the Nets are like, we're going to try to be more player first. And it wasn't just about Durant and Kyrie, in 7 years, there could be other superstars. I mean, this is one thing I'll say about Jeannie Buss. No matter how the Lakers have functioned as an organization since she became, lead owner and president, she has always understood that how they take care of stars is vital. Because players want to be Lakers. And as long as the best players want to be Lakers, the Lakers will always have a great chance to be a good team.
No, Brian, to me, this is about power and who holds it, right?
Right.
This is your beat. Your beat is not breaking transactions. It's covering how power is wielded behind the scenes. And right now, how would you say that power, the dynamic is tilting as a result of the story that we're discussing?
It's in flux right now. Joe Tsai's point was, they offered Kyrie a contract. It wasn't like they didn't intend to keep him. They didn't want to trade Durant. What Joe Tsai wanted to do was renegotiate the way the team was going to operate.
Mm.
And the first phase of that was not giving in to what Kyrie wanted as a contract and not giving in to what Durant wanted for Kyrie as a contract. And they won that one. They stared down with Kyrie, and although picking up a $36 million option is hardly yielding, essentially, the victory in that went to Kyrie. And my guess was that they're going to continue to push that. Like, Kyrie, no, we're not going to operate practice like this. No, we're not going to operate the offense like this. No, if you're going to try to do whatever he was doing behind the scenes that was causing issues, no, we're going to shut that down. Could they have turned that around without actually changing the personnel? I don't think we'll ever know.
And so I guess at the end here, right, like, you were, before you were America's meme sweetheart, you were taking the slings and arrows as LeBron's beat writer, right? You had a front row seat more than anyone else on the planet to the player empowerment era.
So when people want to talk about me correctly forecasting something, it was when I looked around a year and a half into LeBron's tenure in Miami and said, this ain't lasting. And I didn't talk about it every day, but occasionally I would talk about it. I got lambasted for that. And I know that Twitter wasn't as big of a deal in 2012 as it is in 2022, but what Twitter there was destroyed me. Yeah, I stopped looking at my mentions on Twitter 2014-ish. And I say that to people and they go, you're lying. Pablo, I will take a lie detector test that I have not looked at my mentions in coming up on a decade. I guess I can't say for sure the last day that I haven't looked at it. So whatever they were saying, I don't know. Positive or negative, I don't know.
Brian, the question I have is, you were there covering this, forecasting this accurately, chronicling it intimately. The player empowerment era brought us to this point in Brooklyn. What is this era now, as you understand it? Are we still in it? Is it something else? What's on the horizon here?
There is the beginning of pushback by teams. Definitely in Brooklyn, definitely in Utah. And they are going to be out stars because of it. And we are going to head into a collective bargaining negotiation that's going to take place over the summer. There's been an assumption that the owners are going to push for like massive changes.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard that from any of the actual people on the ownership side. We do have Adam Silver, the commissioner, on record as saying players have to honor their contracts. And we do see two organizations shoving back on their stars, potentially at the detriment of their championship hopes. And we're monitoring the Lakers. We're monitoring
oh boy.
The Lakers.
Oh, boy. Brian, what you're telling me is that something is happening in Los Angeles.
Maybe. This is not very, sensitive to vegans and vegetarians, but it's not like the Lakers are sitting at their grocery store choosing between filet mignon or, ahi tuna or prime rib. Like, they have a choice of Kyrie Irving, and that's it. That's the only thing on the shelf. And so, of course, LeBron wants Kyrie Irving. He has one of his rings that got Kyrie Irving's name on it.
Oh, boy.
Of course LeBron doesn't care about the 2029 first-round pick. He's trying to win the 2023 title. So definitely Brooklyn, definitely Utah. And we have L.A. Lakers on the watch list for pushing back on, players guiding so much of what's going on.
Brian Windhorst, a man of literally like millions of memes that you will never see.
Yes.
Thank you for taking us behind the curtain.
You're telling me like there's a top 19 or something? I'm like, my God, there were 19 that made a list? Oh my God.
You have so much to never learn, my friend. Yes. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.